From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made in less than 1 hour when the first World Cup semifinal match kicks off between France and Belgium. Tomorrow, England takes on Croatia. And this is big business around the world, even if it feels like a bit of an afterthought in the United States. This hour, we thought we could learn about why the World Cup is so special by inviting panelists from each of the four semifinalist nations. It hasn't worked out exactly as we hoped, but close enough. Well, we certainly wish we could have a friend from Croatia here. We don't, but we've got the rest of the nations covered. This hour, we're talking about the passions, the pain, the culture, and the meaning of the World Cup in these countries. American fans, if you can't quite wrap your head around the energy of the World Cup, you can call or write the program to share your thoughts this hour. And let me welcome our guests who are here with us in studio. Rory McKinnon is a British citizen, a soccer fan, and a bar manager at The Old Toad, where all of the best action has been watched there. You guys have a huge TV there now.
We do.
Did you just import it for the World Cup?
Yep, we got the TV in. We got a 65-inch TV brought in especially for the games. So we've been showing every single game there. We got now a second TV for the England game. So we've been showing all the coverage.
Have you been watching the matches at the Old Toad?
I have been watching and working every game.
What I mean now, your last match wasn't a laugher. Nothing in the World Cup's a laugher, but it was more comfortable than the Colombia knockout match. What was that like watching the penalty kick shootout there?
That was very tense. The Colombia game was, especially once it got down to the penalty shootout, after conceding the last minute goal in the 93rd minute, it was a tense extra 45 minutes for the remaining of the game. And the penalty shootout was great. It was tense. It was the goalkeeper. He was fantastic, Pickford. So I think the curse has been lifted. So it's great for England.
All right, and Virginia Hartman is here. Virginia is a Belgian citizen, a soccer super fan here, and we've got a lot to talk about with Belgian culture. It's a little bit different in England and Belgium, and we're going to talk about that. But Virginia, welcome to you, and pronounce your maiden name.
Actually, Virginia Kuke Hartman.
Kuke.
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 Yeah, I'm actually not a Belgian blood. Like, it's not. My grandparents immigrated from Albania 60 years ago, so... my dad and I were born and raised in Belgium.
You were born and raised in Belgium. And she walked into the studio and she said, I know I sound American, but I was born in Brussels.
Yeah, we're just really smart people and really good with languages.
unlike
the French.
How many languages? Oh. Did you just say unlike the French?
Yes.
Oh. Well, in a moment, you're going to have a guest on the phone to kind of wrestle with that. Producer Megan Mack, we're going to have him in just a couple of minutes, right, Pascal? Okay, so he'll have something to answer to there. How many languages do you speak?
I speak three fluently, and I dabble a little bit in other ones that I learned in school or just being in Europe.
And Belgian beer is the best in the world?
It is, and the chocolate and the food and everything.
Oh, okay.
But America's awesome, too. Rory, I'm proud American, too.
Rory, who is the bar manager at the Old Toad, where is the best beer in the world from?
That is a good question. Very good question. I only started drinking beer when I first arrived. I've been here 10 months, and I hated beer. But now I've developed a style for the German styles, the Belgium. We have a great selection of Belgian beers, so I've got to promote the Belgian.
Good answer, good answer.
Yeah.
Unless you end up playing in the World Cup final.
Unless we will not be selling any Belgian beers during the World Cup final.
Sore losers already, I see.
The Old Toad is decidedly English in its support there. Again, the matches kick off. The first match in the semifinals, 2 p.m. today, 2 p.m. tomorrow for England-Croatia. Rory, what does this mean for England? Everywhere I look around, I see this meme, it's coming home. What does it's coming home mean?
So it's coming home, that started off as a meme. So it's been for a while. Like it started off as a bit of a joke. Like all the England fans be like, oh, it's coming home after 66, well, since 1966 was the last time they won the World Cup. And it started off as a meme, and now it's turning into reality. Like the people are starting to believe it, the fans, especially. I've seen all the videos in England. I watched one of the game. I was down in England to watch the Panama game. I went out in Liverpool to watch it, and the scenes were unbelievable. Like there's going to be street parties, and I'm gutted I can't be. If we do make it to the final, I won't be in England, but it's going to be crazy, crazy scenes.
Is there a part of you that thinks about flying home?
I mean, I'd love to, but I don't have the funds to fly home for that. Unfortunately.
It's coming home is so for years it was almost the cynical British fans' way of making fun of your lack of success.
Yep.
So it's like saying, yeah, we're going to win, but yep. but so not really. But now it's like, whoa,
yep.
it's coming home.
Like the song, well, it's been the three lines, it's been number one in the UK for the last month, I think. So it's people are starting to believe that it's going to happen.
I do think it's going to be an England-Belgium final. Belgium, a powerhouse squad there. And Virginia was saying before the hour began there that in your native Belgium, it's more of a man sport to watch and play.
I mean, growing up, it might have changed in the last 18, well, how long have I been here? 17 years. But it really is. I never heard of like girl, you know, teams or anything like that. And my father was always been big into soccer. And I just went and I remember as a little kid just going to see him with my mom and my brother. We'd go and cheer him on. And then my brother eventually, and my uncle owns a soccer club, and all the kids, we would all go there. Everybody works there. It was just, we went to support, but we didn't play. So that's why, I mean, my knowledge of soccer is not as good as like a lot of the Belgian men, but I just know how to be loud and cheer on my team. So.
I assume now if I were to parachute into Brussels, everyone would be talking about the World Cup.
Oh, you know, I really wanted to say this when I came on, because very few people know anything about Belgium other than, you know, chocolate and beer. And Belgium is a very tiny country, and it's very divided. I'm from Brussels. The capital is a bit different, but the north speaks Flemish and the south speaks French. And for as long as I can remember, it's very, very divisive country, and we don't like each other. It's the truth. But this World Cup has brought our country together.
Wait,
like nothing.
Your north and south don't like each other?
No. Mm-mm.
We cannot relate here in the United States.
Yeah, but we don't even speak the same language. So it's very different. Like it's hostility. Is that the word in
sure.
English? That's very, like, people don't understand how it's so small yet so divisive. And this World Cup, doesn't matter if you're a French speaker, a German speaker, or a Dutch speaker, Flemish, which are the three national languages. We are red together. That's our, like, you know, our thing. And we are just
red together.
Yeah, red together in English. And our coach speaks English. Like nobody speaks the same language but English. So
okay, and so when you say Flemish. Flemish yep. is Dutch, or
Flemish is like Dutch. It's like almost saying British English and American English. It's that difference. Okay. Like the British English is the Dutch, the formal, and then Flemish is like the American English.
Do you
like,
speak it?
Very, no, almost nothing. So you start in first grade learning Flemish.
But if I were to say like, is that,
yeah,
is that
how
the
are
same?
You?
Is that the same in,
you guys,
in Flemish?
The Dutch say gaat, like, and the Dutch say gaat. You see, like, the accent's different?
Gaat and gaat.
It's like more like, the Dutch more.
It's very guttural.
It's just the accent's different. Like, the British English is to American English. I would compare it that way.
And Rory, you barely speak English, right?
I know. It's difficult for me to be here.
Look at this. It's Belgian, French native,
no
speaking
what's going
girl
on right
speaks
now.
Better English.
Rory McKinnon from England, Virginia Kukai Hartman.
Yeah.
Do it one more
Hartman
time.
Hartman is fine.
Okay, but is it Kukai?
Kukai.
Kukai. Hartman is from Belgium. And on the line with us is Pascal Suarez, who is an honorary French consul in New York and an avid soccer fan. And I'm told that it's loud in the bar where you are getting ready for the match. Is that right, Pascal?
This is correct, yes. I'm in Meske in Hotel Avenue in Buffalo. It's like the temple of soccer in Buffalo, New York.
Pascal, let me send my apologies for your forthcoming loss to Belgium this afternoon.
Well, I like how to say, but did you forget how the heat is very important? So it's what I've been telling my friend from Belgium. I say, the chocolate from Belgium is going to melt.
I see. Okay. Virginia didn't think it was all that clever. I will say, Pascal, I was with some very close friends from France in 1998 when Zinedine Zidane helped lead that charge. And I wonder if you could describe for us what it means to the people of France, what's going on right now. How important is this World Cup?
Well, we always need to have a good story. We wait 4 years to have a very good story. You know, there is the politics, there is everything like that. But when it comes to soccer, everybody's behind the national team. So, yes, after the head ball in 98, I think we won this one.
Yeah.
The other one was with the head ball, was difficult. So what I should say with the French people, we have some issues the past 10 years, 15 years. And I think now we're on the right track. Players want to play for their country. So it's it's a little bit nationalistic behind, if you want. So I think it's good. It's good in the sense that people, they every 4 years, they are being a team. People who want to play, have fun, and bring this to the highest. So I believe that today is very good for the country. It's very good for the French also, you know. So maybe less for England or France or Belgium, but we will see that in the future.
What would it mean in Belgium? You've talked a little bit about it, Virginia, but actually winning this, pulling this off, what do you think it means to your country?
Oh, other than a win, which is always a good thing, it's we'd like to show French how strong Belgians really are. Really, we have this, you know, we're rivals in everyday life, the French and the Belgian. The French love to make fun of us Belgians, and today it's our turn. So,
Pascal, is that true? Do the French make fun of the Belgians?
Yes. I would say, let's put it in perspective. When you are in Belgium, there is no border between France and Belgium. It's flat. It's the flat pays. So there is, for example, in Lille in northern France, there's a little town who is on the border. So there is someone, the kitchen is in Belgium and the bedroom is in France. So, we do have a lot of history together. We love our friends from Belgium. We drink probably more beer from Belgium than England.
Because there's no good beer in France. So sad.
Go ahead, Pascal. Virginia didn't mean to interrupt you. Her inner monologue came out. Sorry. Go ahead, Pascal.
No. I think it's very important that, there is... What is very interesting is you get two countries. There is a king in Belgium. There is a queen in England. And in France, you get a republic. There is two countries who are part of Europe, and there is one country decided to go away from Europe. So there is all these little things that are going to, people are going to think about it. They're going to say, oh, the French, blah, 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 Belgium, blah, blah, blah. But Belgium is in the middle of it. So I think it's very, this year has been a very outstanding, different kind of World Cup. And I think everybody, I feel sorry for the Americans not to be part of it. But it was outstanding workout.
Now, we needed a reset for our program here domestically. So you've heard a little bit from Pascal and Virginia about what it would mean in their nations. Rory, what would this mean for England to win this World Cup?
To win this World Cup would be, well, as in England right now, there's been a huge heat wave, and people are going crazy. It's just adding to the tenseness of the tournament. And I think if England win the World Cup, like, it will be remembered forever. Like, it'll be one of the bigger things that I will witness in my lifetime if England win it.
I want to ask, based on something that Virginia said, which is interesting, and I'll start with Pascal on this, but I want all of our guests to tell me more of their thoughts on this. Pascal, I was in Spain this past March, and there's a lot of talk of separatism. We were in Barcelona. But even in the Basque country, in San Sebastian, they're watching closely what happens in Barcelona when it comes to separatism, because the Basque country, with their impenetrable language and their culture, they would like to be their own independent state. And yet, despite all of that animosity between the Basque and the Spanish, and between in Barcelona and Madrid, when they play football, they are all together. I mean, when Iniesta is on the field scoring a goal in the World Cup and they're winning the World Cup, they are all Spaniards. It's very interesting to watch. And Virginia was saying earlier, Pascal, that in the northern part of Belgium and in the southern part of Belgium, it's typically pretty tense and there's some animosity, but they are red together for this tournament. Everyone is united. I wonder how you feel about France in that way, and why is it that football can unite people? Why does sport unite people in this way when we, on a day-to-day basis, we let our divisions sort of dominate our lives?
I think you touch a very interesting subject. I should say, you talk about Spain, you talk about Pays Basque, who is half, Spanish and French, but you should talk about something, don't forget about it, it's about Scotland and England. So, last year they voted not to separate from England. So what is interesting is, I think you have to put this behind a concept, economic concept, but also political concept. There is the European community who has been built in the past 60 years. they just show some French flag. So from this, it was a country with other country working together. We have, for example, in France, we have Corsica. We have also Brittany people. But Corsica was at one time a kind of an issue of being a kind of independent. But obviously, as you remember, Napoleon was born in Corsica. So when it comes to a nation, yeah, that's true. The thing changed people. They come behind the nation. I would say maybe the touch of a nationalism, you know, it's something was very important, was taking place. Important, I won't say that, but it was taking place in Europe. So when it comes to the soccer team, you know, you are a nationalist if you want your team to. But when it comes to the sport, when the big event around the world is done, people, they say, you know, we have the day-to-day, the politics, and why we are here, why we decide to not be part of this group. Why we want to. So this is very complex, you know. So I would say sport would have a tendency to bring people together. You know, I think in the U.S. you can see that. But also sport could be an issue to bring a discussion. But when the sport is not involved, people, they go back to their grassroots and they say, you know, I share for this team, but my territory is this one and I would like to have more independence. I think it won't happen. Because I think Europe has been paying a lot for European region. So mostly the national government, they lose with the European Union, and the regional government, they were able to grasp a lot of money investment from the European Union. So today I would say, you know, Europe, yes, may have some weaknesses. But at the same time, people who are in Scotland, people who are in Barcelona area or in the Pays Basque, they benefit a lot from the European. So there is, we just need to have the right map for what we want to do in the future. Because you know, you are talking about 550 million people, so it's not a small package. It's a big thing.
Virginia, why is it that you think if you can be read together during the World Cup, you can't be read together for the other 300 days of the year?
I don't know. That's the, what is it called? There's an expression, I forget what it's called, but that's the age-old question or whatever. What's the question?
Yeah.
It's always been, and people will deny it. I think, you know, I lived in Brussels until I was 19 years old, and I felt that tension. Like, I was in the French-speaking school, and our bus stopped next to the Flemish. We didn't talk to them. It just was how we were. Or we went to the coast, which is all Flemish. They wouldn't speak to us in French, even though they knew how to speak in French, because there you're in, you know, the Flemish part you speak. But here, Belgians forget about it. Like, when I meet Belgians in the United States or anywhere around the world, they're like, no, that's not true. We are one country. We're all from Belgium. And it's not. It isn't. It's never been. It never will be. You know, the only reason I think it's united, too, it's because, yes, it's our country. And in front of everyone, we're showing that we're united. But the group has the French natives and it has the Flemish natives. So the team itself, it's mixed. Like I told you earlier, our coach is from Spain and has to speak English to the team because, I mean, that's the one language that is understood by everyone. It's not even our national language or anything. But, you know, people think it'll change, but it'll never change. So, but
Rory, why do you think we're able to come together over sport in this way?
Well, I think people have been growing up with sport, like football. Well, football for me personally, I've grown up with it. My dad is. He's been following football since he was a child, and I've been the same. Like, my whole family, we're all big football fans. And it just brings people, that's like my whole group of friends. Like, we play football together, and we've stuck together for about 12 years I've known them. And we just, everyone goes to, like, we all go to the local football games. And then I'm a Manchester United fan, so I go to their games, and we all have our own team and following. And it's the same, like, people come together, like, Liverpool and Manchester United, they hate each other. Like, I live near Liverpool, and a lot of my mates are Liverpool fans, but like the rivalries are huge. But like, as soon as international football comes in, like, that's out the window. Like, people come together, they all rooting for the same team.
And by the way, you're a Man U fan?
I am a Man U fan.
That's insufferable. By the way, American fans, if you're not familiar, this is the Yankees Red Sox, where they hate each other, but everybody else hates them. So anyway, go ahead.
All right. Well, you can have that.
It's fair.
It might be fair.
And Rory's going to tell me I'm just envious as an Everton fan.
The majority of people, you always, Everton, I don't know why you'd ever go for Everton. I had no idea.
So it's a long story.
But there's, like, that's what I mean. Like, everyone comes together for this 4 weeks, 5 weeks of football. As soon as the season starts, like, everyone will go back to hating each other, but it just brings the whole country together.
I'm reading an article here. England risk punishment if fans sing pro-Brexit chants during World Cup matches,
yeah.
Rory.
So that could be a problem, but I don't think it's... The whole Brexit thing, like, my view on it is, like, it's probably not... I would have voted to stay in the European Union because it's going to be beneficial to England and Scotland. You've obviously got the other nations and you've got Scotland. Like, it's just going to... I don't know how it's going to go down, but we'll see. I'm not going to delve into politics. And we're talking about football. We'll keep to football.
That's fair, but I am going to say this. I'm going to say that, and I want to... I didn't mean to get kind of serious here because we're trying to have some fun, but I do think there's a serious point, and I'd like you all to weigh in. And Rory, I'm going to push you a little on that.
All right.
Because here's the point, and I'll start with Pascal, and our guest, by the way, representing France, England, and Belgium, three of the four nations in the semifinals of the World Cup. And France and Belgium kick off in 33 minutes. The serious point is this. Right now, around the world, we are having this fresh, you know, sort of reappraisal of multiculturalism in a way that I think a lot of us who were sort of, you know, if you embrace multiculturalism, you're sort of surprised that this moment is happening, but it's happening. And in France, you had sort of vestiges of it in the same way that have manifested in this country. I'm sure in Belgium there are issues, as Virginia has described, with North and South and different language speaking. And there's this idea, Pascal, that the human condition is never going to fully embrace multiculturalism, that those who fear it say that it is not natural, it will lead to strife, and that's why we've been surprised at this resurgence. Here in the United States, we might call it white nationalism or the alt-right or whatever, but around the world, there's these clashes of multiculturalism. And I just believe that we have to choose to see the beauty in it the way that our kids do until they're taught not to, mm-hmm. and the way that we all do when we become football fans. You know, when it's red together in Belgium, you're proving that multiculturalism is not something that has to pull you apart. So, Pascal, I don't know why I'm on this rant, but Pascal, help me here with how you see it in France, for example. Multiculturalism as an issue and why we can transcend it.
I would say soccer and sport in general, when it's the Olympics, is the same way. People from different kind of background, different kind of ethnic, different kind of region, they come behind the national team. And I think it's good. Saying this, France, and it's probably the same way in Belgium, and probably the same way in England, we never deal with immigration. So when we get this faction of group of people who promote fascism or promote violence or promote, there is a misunderstanding. We never deal directly with these people. Today, Zidane has been the coach of Real Madrid. Now he's not anymore. He won this three things. Should be Zidane the next coach of the French team? But Zidane is a Muslim. And one of the and there is nothing wrong to be a Muslim, what I'm saying.
Of course.
Because I've been living in America. And in France, it's the same way. But you have always extremities. And people who won't put water in their wine or won't agree with this, and they are going to be more extreme. So we are dealing with people who are extreme, who are developing ideas who are extreme. So in order to bring some other people who may thought of it, but they are more cool, but at the same time they realize that, you know, maybe I didn't get this job because this guy was, from one part of France or another social scale. So we do have, and I would say I study immigration on the global scale, and usually national government in Europe, they never really dealt with after the 60s. We have been carrying people from different kind of backgrounds, and the background started to be more, I would say, specialized, if you want, in the sense, because of religion. So you may have the Catholic on one side, you may have the Muslim on the other side, and the school, who suppose that in France, the Republican, so there is no, is not, you know, in God we trust. The separation of the church and the state has been in France for the past 150 years, so we should not have any problem. But the politicians, they always play. They play the different kind of groups. So to the advantages, or unfortunately, if it's not the advantages, it's the advantages of the other group. So today, the only thing that I see is to see some hope for different countries is to have this kind of event. I would like to see the World Cup every 2 years because, you know, people are will be behind, people are going to support, they will have a diversity in their team. And you can see probably in the French team, in the Belgian team, in the English team, some diversity, different kind of backgrounds. And this is good. This is good for, you know, multicultural, you know, property.
Yeah. When you look at the Belgium squad itself, two of your best players, Lukaku and De Bruyne, look very different.
Totally. And they're both Belgian, though.
Yeah, they're both Belgian. Absolutely. And so, Virginia, am I off the rails here? Or do you think there's a point in saying, for all the fear that some people are expressing about multiculturalism, that when we choose to come together, sometimes over sport, I think to me it's all the evidence we need that we can overcome that fear.
It's true. But how are we going to change it, I guess? I start at home with my kids and then hope that they can change the world one day. And
do you worry about that? Do you worry about what your kids are going to see in terms of...
I worry. I mean, I live in a community, so the suburbs here of Rochester, that's very non-diverse. Mm-hmm. Had no idea when I moved here. We moved from South Florida, which was much more diverse than here. And before that, I was in Belgium, where I honestly never asked a friend what religion they were, because it was something you didn't ask. We didn't ask who they voted for, because it wasn't something we talk about. You were my friend. My best friends are from all different countries and backgrounds and religions, and it was who we were. Like I said, my neighborhood where I grew up was so diverse that to me it was normal. And then I'm here in a very white Christian community. And my kids, I'm fearful of that. I don't want them to think that that's normal. I want them to be exposed, and maybe, you know, my Belgian side may not seem very diverse sometimes to them, but I, you know, I'm a Belgian citizen with Albanian ancestors, you know, grandparents and parents. And I try to explain that to my kids. It's not everything isn't what we see here. There's diversity, and we travel a lot with them. They've been to Europe and all over the United States. And I explain to them different religions, and, you know, because that's who I am, but I don't know how other people do it at home. But hopefully teaching them, and I have my Belgian flag hanging at home, two of them, two big ones next to the American flag. And because I want people to know that, you know, I embrace being different, and I hope that people will ask me. I was worried at first. I'm like, is it okay to put my Belgian flag up? And but I want people to ask, hey, where are you from? And because I sound very American. I may be a little Canadian at times, but that's about it. So, and I learned English. When I came here, I barely spoke English.
Wow.
And I learned English because I was sick of people telling me, talking slow to me or thinking I didn't understand what I was saying. I had a very heavy French accent like Pascal. But I changed. I worked hard. I watched TV a lot. And I learned to speak English.
Your American accent is remarkable.
I know. Can you tell the difference between the French and the Belgian? Just saying, like, you know, bringing it back. You see how poor Pascal still has an accent. Me, I'm like so good.
I always tell my six-year-old accents are beautiful, and the rest of the world think that we have an accent.
They are, but speaking That's different exactly languages right. is better, right, Pascal?
I agree.
Je vous taquine.
Okay, so
I'm laughing.
Rory, can we at least extrapolate anything from the way the world comes together for the World Cup and the way that we can maybe manage our lives week to week, month to month, and get over our fears of the differences that we have?
I think in the future, eventually, if the sport and tournaments keep happening like the World Cup, eventually, like this World Cup, I think will be a point to bring people together, which is everyone, like, it's been such a crazy World Cup, like all the upsets of the from the games, like, and people are just, I think, like, I've seen it, and especially being in America, like, people are, like, all these Americans, like, obviously you support America, but your team's not, they didn't make it. So everyone's talking together, like, especially at the Old Toad, like, all our customers that come in, they are making conversation about all the games, and everyone's enjoying themselves, having a good time, and, like, I've seen it, like, working, and people, they've created relationships and friendships, and it's been great to watch, like, from working the games and taking it all in of watching people, like, speak to each other and become friends, and it's been great from my point of view.
I love seeing those barriers come down. Rory, by the way, works at the Old Toad, which is a wonderful place to watch the match today. 2 o'clock,
yep,
starts
2 o'clock.
In 24 minutes, and then 2 o'clock tomorrow for England and Croatia. I should also mention, by the way, that we did reach out. We did try to bring a member of all four different representative nations here to this program. We don't have anyone from Croatia, but WXXI, by the way, our travel club, is going to Croatia next year. So I should tell you that if you want to go, we're going to go explore Croatia in May of 2019, and we think it's an awesome-looking place to go. I mean, just look at the visuals. Oh, my gosh. Some of Dubrovnik, have you seen the pictures? I've never been there.
It's a really hot...
Have you been
there? I've never been, but
I've seen the pictures, and I've always wanted to go there.
Pascal, you been to Dubrovnik?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
but, don't forget, it's the country used to be... Yugoslavia,
yeah.
And Croatia, it's on the Adriatic Sea, and it's people who have been in Italy on the Adriatic Sea. On the other side, usually when you are south enough of Italy, it's Croatia. So, you know, the beaches are beautiful, the creeks, the color of the water, it's warm, it's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, and so we think it's going to be great. We're going to go to Dubrovnik, Split, Opatija, Zagreb next year, May of 2019. Opportunity to visit Montenegro and the Bay of Kotor. So for more information, listeners, if you want to join us next year, it's going to be awesome. Laura Garrison is the WXXI's person in charge. She's the matriarch of those trips. 258-0309. I'm sure we're going to sell out the Croatia trip. It's going to be awesome. So even though we couldn't have someone from Croatia on the show today, we wish them well in their match tomorrow against England, though not that well, if Rory is to say.
By the way, to
Pascal's point, Rory, the nation you're facing tomorrow, their first World Cup ever was 98, and they came third in 98. So they've had quite a good run.
It's a big game. It's definitely going to be harder than...
They're no joke.
...than Sweden. No, they've got a great squad. They've got a great group of players. A lot of the players are first teams, like... We've got Modric and Kovacic. They're Real Madrid players. They're the top players.
You expect them to be a harder match than Sweden?
I do. I thought Sweden was comfortable, which, as you mentioned, it was easy to watch. So I think that was a good build up to go from Sweden, and now they're going to get a bit more of a test, and then that'll prepare us for Belgium in the final.
Do you know that my last name, Dawson, which is probably common in the UK,
do you know
what my actual last name is?
What?
Gustafsson.
Oh, it is. Yep.
Very Swedish. Dawson is a made-up name, which is what happened to a lot of Europeans when they came to the United States. There's no real Dawson blood in me. It's Gustafsson. So I will forgive you for the last match. We were very excited. Swedes like us.
I knew they weren't going to win, but they put out a good... It was a good game.
No, come on. You have to be a cynic. You're English. You had to figure there was some disaster around the corner.
No, I was comfortable even before the game. The Colombia game,
yeah.
I was skeptical. I was like, this is going to be a tough, because you watched the Colombians. They played...
Fabulous.
Their game is definitely different to the English style of play. There's some dirty tackles that go in there.
No. Okay. Maybe.
So I'm not going to say anything more about the Colombians. But
they have... I also watched some of their matches in the group stage.
No, they were fantastic. They were
beautiful.
They were a good team.
Yeah.
I liked watching them play up until that game. But that was that. That was done and dusted.
Done and dusted now. So let's do this here. Before we let Virginia and Pascal go, because they've got to get ready to watch the match at 2 p.m., I want to get some final thoughts from them. Virginia Kukai-Hartman, who is a Belgian citizen, even though her accent is just remarkable. Is your accent, when you speak in French, this...
I don't want to toot my own horn, but it's pretty perfect. Yeah. I sound very much like we from Brussels. I have a strong Brussels accent, but I don't know.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So So let's get some closing thoughts for you on this. Is it strange being in the United States during this World Cup run, where most of your American friends probably are like, "What? When is it? What is it?"
It's not strange. It's a little sad because I miss home so much during these times, because you need to get on Facebook or whatever and just watch the videos of them getting together in the town square or whatever.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's amazing. And I mean, when we win tonight, no one will sleep. I mean, the grocery store closed early today just to let their employees go home to watch the game. It is, I can't wait to get on the phone with my brother and my sisters and see it live there. And everybody that knows me knows where I'm come from. I am proud to be in this country, but I love where I'm from and I'm proud of where I come from. So everybody around me that has no idea even where Belgium is on a map loves Belgium and is rooting for them. My sister-in-law is at the house right now with her kids who are tiny and have no idea, and they say go Belgium. So our whole neighborhood and everybody knows where we're from, and it's exciting to share the passion of a sport that maybe they wouldn't have cared about, being that the American team is not on it.
Wouldn't it be interesting if the United States ever played Belgium in the World Cup?
We did, actually.
I know.
And we had gone down to Florida because there's a lot of Belgians in Florida where we're from, South Florida. And my kids were very confused. And my son, I think, so that was 4 years ago. He was about 3 and a half, almost 4 years old. And he goes, "Mom, who do I vote for? Who do I root for? And a few days later, I even asked him, I said, "Where are you from, honey? Where do you live?" He goes, "I live in Belgium." I'm like, "No, you don't. You live in the United States." He goes, "But why every time we watch football, I scream, 'Go Belgium!'" I'm like, "Because that's the best part of you, baby." Just kidding. But yeah,
you just said something. You said, "Go Belgium." And I wish the same way, go England. But I already know who is going to be on the top today. So
Belgium,
I
yes,
wish
you're
you
right.
Good day, and thank you very much for the opportunity to. And I hope this country will realize that the MLS is not the way to go to do soccer in the U.S. So, you know, it's another discussion that we should have at some point. And we're creating some center in California to try to change a little bit the idea of soccer in this country. But it's a big exercise to do. I wish you a good day. Thank you very
Thank
much,
Thank you,
everybody.
Pascal. Thank Bye-bye. You. Good luck to
Allez
France there.
Allez les diables!
Okay, I don't know if I should ask you to translate.
He says, "Go blue."
Yeah, yeah.
And I say, "Let's go devils," because that's their...
Red devils, yeah.
Yeah, the red devils.
Pascal, by the way, is an honorary French consul in New York and a soccer fan, calling us from a heavily populated bar in the Buffalo area. And Virginia Hartman, a Belgian citizen and a soccer super fan, you're free to go.
Thank you.
You better
Thank you
go.
So much for having me. And I can't wait to play against you, yep. England.
Good luck in the
we'll
final.
We'll be at the Blue Toad, wherever that is.
The old toad.
This mommy does
the
not get
toad.
Out enough. Yep. So
we'll
old
be down
toad.
There.
Okay, and don't cry too much when we beat you. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
I should also tell producer Megan Mack, if you could check your screen there. So thank you. You're free to go there. And Rory and I are going to, I want to warn the listeners for the remainder of the hour, we're going to get into some soccer-specific talk.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Are you ready
I'm all in.
You ready to do it? So a couple of things here. I want to read a couple of emails that come in. First of all, this is from Tim. He says, "Evan, you're an Everton fan. Awesome. The People's Club. You're absolutely right about Man U and Liverpool. Great show today."
Okay.
So that's a vote for... You want to know why I'm an Everton
yeah,
fan?
Yeah, I'd like to know the history behind this.
So when I really... Oh, that door's open. when I really got into to football in the late 90s, one of my favorite American players was Joe Max Moore. And he got a contract to go play for Everton.
Okay.
And he tallied 6 times in his first 7 matches for Everton. And never again thereafter.
Yep.
But he scored the game-winning goal in an international against Argentina on a wonder strike. Americans don't usually have the kind of quality of goals that you see in EPL, in La Liga, etc. You know, it's usually dink and dunk kind of stuff. So he scored one of those thunder strikes that made me a fan instantly. And you can still find it in grainy video on YouTube if you want, what made me an Everton fan and a Joe Max Moore fan. So that's why. And I've kept my fandom because
fair.
I'm loyal.
Yep, that's fair. That you've kept loyal. I know a lot of Americans jump on the bandwagon. Whoever's winning, they'll vote for them, and I don't like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you must have been you're probably a dirt under your nails working class Manchester guy, right?
Yeah, I've been supporting them since I was probably about four years old. My brother, my younger brother, he's a Liverpool fan, and my dad, he supports his local team, Air United, which is in Scotland, and he's never going to support anyone else. So we all have our differences, but it's just great. The whole football and like supporting your local team, like my local team, Southport, which they're not even in the football league. They're way below.
Which division?
I think they're in the Conference North, it's called. So you've got the Premiership.
Yep.
You've got the Championship, League One, League Two. Then you've got the Conference Premier below, and then the Conference North below that. So for a while, Southport, they're...
It's like for people with injuries.
So it's kind of like, they're not a full-time club, they're semi-pro. But I had a season ticket for about 4 years there, and I used to go to every game, and just because I love football, and that was it's my only hobby that I have that I do every week, and I'll watch it every week and play. I play here in Rochester every week, so...
Where do you play?
Play at the Sports Garden.
I've played in the Sports Garden.
Yep, so I found a team about 6 weeks ago, so I've been playing there every week. So
I've been temporarily retired from the Sports Garden.
Yep.
I'll be coming back, and I'll be avoiding whatever league you're in.
Okay, well...
They have a league for old people.
They do. Yeah. They do, I believe. But it's fine. Like, I mean, I think I'm the youngest player on the team, but it's great. Like,
I loved it.
It's competitive, it's fun, it's like we have a great time.
I have loved playing there. I played in a mixed team. It was just wonderful. And it kind of gets you competitive again.
It does, yeah.
A lot of camaraderie. So that's a lot of fun. I want to ask a question from Andrew, who writes the program and says, what does your guest think of professional soccer in Rochester? Is it done? Will the Rhinos come back? Does anyone care?
I have no idea who the Rhinos are.
How long have you been here?
People have told me about them, but I've not seen any.
How long have you been here?
I've been here about 10 months.
Oh boy, so I guess you wouldn't know.
I'd like to have known about them, and I would have definitely have gone to some of the games, but I heard I don't know the whole story behind
it. Yeah, the team shut down
for
the season. There's
and they'd never reopened.
Yeah, well they certainly haven't yet. So in the late 90s, the Rochester Rhinos playing right there in that stadium right across from us, Frontier Field, they drew about 10,000 fans a game. And for, you know, we have MLS here, which isn't super high quality football, but when all the best European players are retired and they want to sit with their feet in the sand, they come here. And some of the players are pretty good. And then we've got the A-League. And they were an A-League team drawing 10,000 fans a game.
That's a lot. That's
pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that's a huge crowd.
Yeah, and so they've had some struggles in recent years. But to your knowledge, as an English and a European football fan, there isn't a lot of buzz about football here, huh?
No, I mean, there is. Well, I've started to see that it's becoming more of a thing, especially after being, like, the whole World Cup tournament. Like, a lot of people are starting to... I know women's soccer is huge over here, but I don't... Because you've got the other sport. You've got American football, you've got baseball, basketball. They're the primary sports for, like, kids growing up. But I think... I know a lot of people in Rochester, they've grown up playing soccer, and they enjoy the sport. Like, it's a great sport to play. But I hope, like, America, they build it up, and they've got a good national team, and it was unfortunate that they didn't qualify. They've got some great players.
Great is a stretch. They have some good players.
Good, they've got some good players. Like, you've got Clint Dempsey, you've got some...
Who has had a lot of some success.
Tim Howard.
Tim Howard has had some success.
He was fantastic.
Christian Pulisic, I think, just signed in the Bundesliga.
He's up and coming, yeah.
He's going to be outstanding.
Yeah, he's a great player.
Yeah, we think so. So, yeah, there's been some Americans who have played in Europe. And I think for American listeners, you know, you described from 4 years old having your fandom.
Yep.
What is it like in England when your fandom is forged at a young age, and how serious is it there?
Well, it depends. It also depends on your upbringing. Like, I know, because, like, rugby is also huge in England and well, especially in Great Britain.
Are there any rules to rugby?
There are.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's another discussion.
It's kind of similar to... I think there's some similarities between American football and rugby. Like, I just understood... Just before the Super Bowl, I understood how American football operated. And it's a hard game for someone who's never grown up playing it or no idea. It's hard to grasp the concept.
It's hard to understand it?
It is.
Is it hard to understand why it's a 60-minute game and yet they're actually active for, like, 7 total minutes?
I know. It's just all your advertisements and
it's
commercials.
Just standing around.
Just...
Wait a second. I forgot we got the John Cleese clip. We'll get to that in a second. Okay. Yeah. But when it comes to your fandom, then, you know, as you say, it sort of depends on your upbringing. And I know you've got some competition with rugby and other sports, but football's really it.
Football's great. Like, that's the... I learned that in school from a young age. Like, I played it in the playground with my friends and... Sport, like, I took, like, PE, and football was, it's always been there. Like, it's probably the biggest sport in England, and we all grow up playing it, and I love it for playing it.
Well, let's hear if our guest Rory McKinnon, who works at the Old Toad, where they have a humongous screen to watch the World Cup today, tomorrow, and the final. If you want to go to the Old Toad to check that out, it's going to be raucous tomorrow when England plays. I'm sure.
It's going to be the last game was crazy. We had a full pub, like everyone singing. It's going to be nuts.
We're going to get back to songs in a second, but John Cleese of Monty Python fame, who was a guest on this program last month, had this to say about observing some differences in countries and sports and football. Let's listen.
The wonderful thing about football is how creative it is. And this is why it has never caught on in America. You see, in America, the action is deliberately kept short so that the sponsors can get in as many commercials as possible. And also so that the players don't have to think for too long. They get instructions from the quarterback, who has, in turn, received them from the offensive coach. So no one has to think for themselves. This is the Dick Cheney version of creativity, otherwise known as doing exactly what you're told. So you get 4 seconds of extremely violent action, and then the only genuinely creative activity involved, a beer commercial. So American football is played like a series of advertising jingles, while soccer is played like jazz.
I like that.
You agree with
that? I do agree with that.
You know, the interesting thing for me is seeing the way Americans would turn that on its head. And the Simpsons show had this episode where Americans are watching a soccer match, and the European announcers are saying, "He holds it, holds it, holds it." And the American announcer saying, "Holds it, holds the ball, holds it some more, holds it." And they're saying there's no action in soccer. Whereas someone like me, I grew up playing it. It's constant action.
Oh, of course it is.
Constant movement.
If you haven't played it, you don't understand it, which is like, it's the same with any sport. You have to, watching and playing the sport is very different. Like, you don't understand the full concept of it until you've physically played the sport.
And that's why I thought your comparison of rugby to American football was a little off, only because rugby is almost constant movement and action.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, I mean, in terms of like the gameplay and like the
moving the ball down the field.
Yeah, like moving the ball down the field and the plays. Like, so if American football was constant, it'd be very similar to the rugby.
But it certainly is not. You mentioned songs.
Yes.
And I want to know if you know most of the Man U songs. Like, if you went to a Man U match.
Yeah.
Is it still Old Trafford, or do they have a new park?
It's still Old Trafford.
If you went to Old Trafford, would you get right in there, and would you know most of what the chants?
I would. They bring out new chants if new players come, but they just slightly change it. But they've got the historic chants, like the "Glory, Glory Manchester," "Glory, Glory Man United." That's been a huge. That's.
Yeah, but there's some that are more creative that I really like.
Yeah.
Can you remember any that are viable for radio?
No, I actually can't.
I'm going to tell you one that I
mean,
I remember
if you can find one and you can play one, that would be great.
I'm going to tell you one that is not. It's on the edge, and Mike Black, who's behind the glass, will tell me afterwards if I shouldn't have said this. But I remember I used to go to the Columbus Crew matches when I lived in Cleveland. I used to go to the Columbus Crew and sit in the north end, and there were some really interesting people who were part of that fan base, and they were playing DC United, and DC United had a 16-year-old American at the time named Bobby Convey, who was this up and coming. He was a kid at the time. He was 16 years old. And the chant said, "Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby Convey can't buy porn." That was the cheer.
Okay.
And you know, they thought that was it was sung, and I'm not going to sing it for you. But you know, that was part of the. And when he got a card, and the whole section was chanting, "Go to your room." You know, it was clever.
Yeah.
It was clever. But there's some that are probably.
No, there are. There's some chants that are suited to the players, like. If the goalkeeper was, because when I went to my local team, like the goalkeeper, some of the goalkeepers, they're not at the highest of their game. So they're in, for professional abilities, they're not as toned as Cristiano Ronaldo when you see them. So there's some chance like that are
picking on the physique.
Yes. You fat. Yeah, I don't need to.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't need to explain that one, but that is a. That's a big one for the opposition goalkeepers, like for the fans behind the goals, they just give this goalkeeper as much off-putting words as he can. Like they would do anything to ruin his game.
I just have this idea that you learn it from birth, like right out of the womb. Like you come out of the womb in England knowing.
And you had to play football as soon as.
And you have to play football.
Yeah, as soon as I entered the world, I could kick a football.
Jill writes to the program and says, "Evan, listening to today's show, I had to share the story. My son came home from middle school introduction, very excited. Mom, we're going to learn English." I said, "You mean like writing and spelling and grammar?" And he said, "No, speaking it." I said, "Honey, you already speak English." He said, "No, speak it like the English people do." Which is it more proper?
It depends where you are in the country. Like down south, I've been asked a lot of questions regarding my accent and what words are proper and what words are not. But I wouldn't consider myself as proper English. Like I'm very northern. The slang that we use, it's not when you look at it, if you compare me to the royals, like the language I use is not proper.
I have a note from Beverly, a listener, saying, "Evan, please mention the great USA women's soccer teams, too." Absolutely, Beverly. The Women's World Cup kicks off next year, and that's always fun to watch. So certainly the United States on the women's side has had tremendous success at the world level, just not for the men, not yet. We'll see. 20 seconds. Let's do some predictions, which are totally worthless, but let's do it anyway. I say Belgium wins today 3-1.
3-1, that's a big score.
It is a big score. And I'm going to say England wins tomorrow 2-0.
Okay.
No. 2-1 to give you
2-1.
Stress.
2-1. I was going to call 2-1 as well for the England game, and I think Belgium will also win 2-1.
Okay, 2-1 and 2-1.
That's my prediction.
And I'm going to say a 1-0 Harry Kane wonder strike to win the World Cup final. Belgium's Lukaku hits the post 4 times.
That's a big prediction you've got there. Yeah, that's
very serious.
Yeah.
What would the old toad be like?
The scenes, the old toad, if England make it to the final, there's going to be pandemonium in the stands.
It has been a lot of fun talking football with you, Rory McKinnon, who's a British citizen, a soccer fan, bar manager at the Old Toad. He's going back to work there. You can catch him there. It's a wonderful place to have some camaraderie, a beer or two, watch the matches. Thank you, sir.
All right, and I'd just like to say it is coming home.
It is coming home. There you go.
Thank you very much.
I think it just might be. Mike Black, Megan Mack, our thanks to previous guests, and I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.